This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This points to a political decision rather than a medical decision. I think that they need to get Mr. Zuma out of jail for the elections coming up in 7 weeks' time.
That was South African lawyer Nathabiseng Dubzana on the release of former President Jacob Zuma on medical parole. Details coming up. Also, Guinea appears to be calm a day after a military coup. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Guinea appears calm today, a day after members of the military took over the government. Yesterday, Army Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya appeared on TV surrounded by other armed soldiers to say the country's borders were closed and that the coup leaders planned to form a transitional government. Idrissa Fall with VOA's French service has been leading coverage on the coup, and he updated my colleague Kate Pond-Dawson on the latest events. He notes that President Alpha Condé, who has been detained, had angered many people in the country when he declared the constitution's two-term limit for presidents no longer applied and ran for re-election last year.
Yesterday, the elite of the army special forces announced that they arrested President Alpha Condé. They suspended the constitution. They dissolved the parliament and the government. And that was yesterday. And in the evening, they decided that they're going to impose a curfew. And this morning, the new guy, leader Mamadi Doumbouya, who is the head of the elite force, called the former ministers to the National Palace and tell them none of them should leave the country and they should better give back all the cars they have from the government. And in the afternoon, what he said is he's going to discuss with the opposition to form a government of national unity. So these are the latest these past 24 hours in Guinea.
How are people there responding? How are members of the Guinean diaspora responding to these events?
I know that a lot of people from the Fulani ethnic, who used to be the main opposition people, they were happy, yes, inside or outside. All of them. But for the people from Malinke, they are divided because the guy who did the coup, the Lieutenant Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya, came from the same region as President Alpha Condé he deposed. So the country is a little bit, I don't know, divided, even though I know that now, even this morning, some radio was passing through some new songs to support the new leader of Guinea, but you never know. And we don't know exactly what he's going to do, because it just happened yesterday. But people seem happy that they're accusing the former president of forcing his third mandate.
Now, what is the status of former President Condé? Where is he?
Military said they brought him to a prison camp called Kabongo. And but we don't have nothing more. They say that he's very well treated. He's not sick. He's not ill. And it's what they said. So I think besides African Union and even I heard China is very angry and they reacted very quickly to their foreign minister because all those countries like China, they have a lot of interest in Guinea because of the mines down there, especially cobalt and copper. So people are condemning African Union, ECOWAS, but I think for Mr. Condé, it's over, is what I think.
That was VOA's Idrissa Fall with VOA's French service. He was speaking with my colleague, Kate Pound-Dawson. Former South African President Jacob Zuma is to be freed from prison after serving just 2 months of a 15-month sentence for contempt of court. The country's Department of Correctional Services has granted the 79-year-old, who's also due to stand trial soon on multiple corruption charges, medical parole because of ill health. The decision means Zuma will serve the rest of his sentence at his home in KwaZulu-Natal province. He was jailed for defying a constitutional court order to testify at an inquiry investigating graft that happened when he led South Africa between 2009 and 2018. Darren Taylor has more.
Zuma's imprisonment in early July sparked riots, looting and destruction in several cities. The chaos caused about 350 deaths, thousands of injuries and arrests, and damage running into billions of rands. President Cyril Ramaphosa blamed the violence on Zuma supporters, calling it an attempted insurrection. Lawyer Ntabiseng Dubuzana says the requirements necessary for an inmate to be given medical parole are clear.
We look at firstly whether their medical condition is such that they cannot be functional in a correctional facility. They cannot take care of themselves basically while under correctional supervision, or whether the medical staff at the correctional supervision cannot handle or cannot deal with the kind of illness, terminal or not. And then thirdly, we need to look at whether the offender or the prisoner is likely to reoffend should they be placed under medical parole. And all those...
Dubuzana says if Zuma's indeed suffering from a very serious condition, it would seem he qualifies for medical parole. The former president won't disclose what actually ails him, saying it's private. Correctional Services spokesman Singabako Nkumalo says Zuma had an operation a month ago and has so far spent most of his 2 months in a hospital, not a cell. Opposition party leaders, such as the Democratic Alliance's John Steenhuisen, are outraged by the decision to free Zuma.
There have been many applications from prisoners who are terminally ill that have been turned down, and it's a bit ironic that this case has obviously been prioritized. And I would say that this points to a political decision rather than a medical decision. I think that they need to get Mr. Zuma out of jail for the elections coming up in 7 weeks' time.
Zuma's support in KwaZulu-Natal remains strong, and he usually wins millions of votes for the ruling African National Congress, or ANC. Those votes are sorely needed by a party that political analysts say is in big trouble ahead of next month's polls to elect leaders in cities and towns around South Africa. But Zuma's spokesman, Mzwanele Manyi, says the decision to give the former president parole isn't based on politics, but on humanity.
It also indicates the precarious state of President Zuma's health. This decision is a product of two teams of doctors, the military hospital doctors and the correctional services doctors.
But as Steenhuisen highlights, final parole decisions are supposed to be made by an independent medical board. In Zuma's case, it appears as if correctional services relied only on reports from a military doctor, who's actually the former president's personal physician, and the department's doctor, who Steenhuisen describes as compromised.
What muddies the waters here even more is that we all know who the National Commissioner of Correctional Services is. It's Arthur Fraser. He's the very man who was Jacob Zuma's spymaster during all those years and subverted the state to protect Mr. Zuma and his allies.
Zuma refused to be examined by independent doctors. Legal experts say based on this and the fact that the prison system failed to constitute the necessary medical board, the state could appeal his parole. Political analysts say Ramaphosa's unlikely to do so for fear of alienating ANC supporters ahead of the elections. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Sudanese authorities say 72 boxes of weapons that arrived by air from Ethiopia were destined for use in crimes against the state. A Reuters report says the shipment is being investigated by a committee tasked with dismantling the government of former President Omar al-Bashir. The intended recipients of the weapons were unclear, but the committee did not rule out that they were former Bashir government loyalists accused of trying to undermine the country's fragile transition towards democracy. On the other hand, according to Ethiopian Airlines, the weapons arrived in Addis Ababa from Moscow in May 2019, and then they were held for verification for a long time. But the party that was supposed to receive the shipment in Sudan sued the airlines, demanding delivery or $250,000 in compensation. Tensions between Sudan and Ethiopia have been running high due to a spillover of the conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region and Ethiopia's construction of a giant hydropower dam. There are fears of massive job losses in Botswana after President Mokwetsi Masisi announced his government will not extend an 18-month-old state of emergency that is due to end this month. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
In a televised address Friday, Masisi said his government will not seek an extension to the state of emergency which came into effect in March last year to help fight the coronavirus. Masisi was under pressure to end the state of emergency, with opposition parties arguing corruption had become endemic.
This government that I lead is fully and completely anchored on the constitution of the Republic of Botswana. It is a democratic government. It is subservient to the people it serves. In this connection, I want to inform the nation to ready itself for exiting the state of public emergency at the expiration of the current one on 30 September 2021.
But there are concerns the end of the edict could trigger massive job losses because companies have been forbidden to retrench staff. Moedi Moasa, spokesperson for the opposition coalition, the Umbrella for Democratic Change, or UDC, says job losses were still being recorded during the state of emergency.
It is not true that the lifting of the state of emergency will halt retrenchments and loss of jobs. What has been happening over this period of over a year under which we are living and under which we had a state of emergency, people lost their jobs. The only thing that happened is that there were limits in terms of civil liberties.
Johannes Tsukudu, the president of a coalition of trade unions, says employers should not take advantage of the end of the state of emergency to cut jobs.
We are aware that there's a likelihood that a lot of employees may lose their jobs as a result of companies not doing well because of this COVID-19 challenges. I think we are quite aware that this Employment Act that they have to guide all the employers in relation to their relationship with the employees. And therefore, any company that intends to retrench must do that within the specifications of the Employment Act.
He says workers' unions will confront employers who arbitrarily dismiss workers.
We shall be watching to see if there's going to be any abnormalities that are going to arise as a result of the envisaged retrenchments.
Minister of Labour Mpoba Lopi says the government will engage with workers' unions and business representatives over the looming retrenchments. He says labour laws should be followed if companies want to retrench. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
Nigeria has nearly 60 million cases of malaria and nearly a quarter of all deaths from the disease in the world. Health experts say malaria kills 9 persons every 9 hours. From the Nigerian capital Abuja, reporter Monachi Chooks tells us about the government's efforts to eliminate the illness.
Malaria is a significant public health hazard, not just in Africa, but around the world. It's responsible for high disease and death rates, especially among pregnant women and infants under 5 years of age. The Nigerian government says the escalating number of infections in the country is pouring in speed to curtail the illness. Dr. Olufemilayo Adeniyi is the director of the National Malaria Elimination Program in the Ministry of Health, where she oversees the second phase of the government's effort to fight the scourge. She says government has put many interventions in place to help combat malaria.
Now we are having such mass campaign across the nation, where we expect that all the households should sleep under insecticide-treated nets. This will prevent malaria in adults, pregnant women, and children.
Adeniyi notes that 27% of global malaria cases, 23% of deaths, and 57 million clinical cases of the disease are in Nigeria. In a recent speech, Dr. Lola Mabogunje, the national team leader for phase two of the anti-malaria program, emphasized the need for continuous funding to help eliminate the illness in Nigeria.
What I believe in, that health is a fundamental human right for me and for every Nigerian. So we will continue to push for the health of the vulnerable group of Nigerians.
Phase two of the National Malaria Program, also known as SUMMAP 2, is a UK aid-funded effort that's working with the government to further reduce the sickness. The health advisor to the UK program, Dr. Ebere Anyachukwu, told VOA that the effort has achieved considerable progress in reducing malaria since its inception.
One quarter of the world's malaria cases and deaths is in Nigeria, so it is a very serious problem in this country. So the UK launched the SUMMAP, the Support National Malaria Program, back in 2019. To help to support the Nigerian government at the federal level and in six states to improve the capacity and the domestic funding for malaria.
For the time being, malaria remains a major public health challenge to Nigeria. Observers say the country's economic development depends on the ability of health specialists to bring it under control. For VOA News, Munachi Chooks.
Sadi Gaddafi, the third son of late Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi, has been freed from prison after 7 years. The French news agency AFP reported he flew to Turkey. It was in 2011, following the NATO-backed uprising that toppled his father, that Sadi fled to Niger. He was extradited to Libya in 2014. A professional football player, Sadi was held in a Tripoli prison, accused of crimes committed against protesters and of the 2005 killing of Libyan football coach Bashir al-Riani. On April 2018, the Court of Appeals in Libya acquitted him of Riani's murder. Zimbabwe is working step by step towards reopening its economy after another raging wave of COVID-19. Recently, authorities announced when schools and universities will open, with an emphasis on vaccination. Reporter Kuzaiza Nwashi has the details.
Tapiwa Nashechiriga is Secretary General of the Zimbabwe National Students Union, or ZINASU. He explains the situation in tertiary institutions to VOA.
The current status is that most institutions are not expressly saying that when they release the new roadmaps as far as the reopening of schools is concerned. But when students get to campus, they end up being barred from accessing campus facilities on the reason that they are not vaccinated. The position is really that most institutions that are not universities have expressly said that they will not accept students back on campus without getting vaccinated.
He adds that universities have a different stance.
While universities are saying that they are encouraging students to get vaccinated, but when you get to campus, you find out that you are not allowed to access campus facilities if you have not received the second jab.
Nelson Muzondo is a student with a local university. He explains how students' rights may be violated.
It's subjective, honestly speaking. Depends with people, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's quite good to just force people. It's kind of forcing people if you really look at it. At the end of the day, you're denying the right to education because maybe I have some health issues that can't necessarily have me vaccinated at that time, but I won't be able to access education if I'm not vaccinated. I'm not against vaccination. It's just I don't think it's been good to enforce it on students.
Chiriga agrees with Muzondo. The right to education and the right to choice may be violated if institutions insist that students get vaccinated before they can access their facilities. Critics say institutions are in a dilemma. Keep everyone safe, by strictly enforcing inoculation or obey people's rights and hope they decide to get the jabs. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinamashe from Harare.
The school year in Cameroon starts today with hundreds of schools in the troubled western regions reopening their doors for the first time in 3 to 5 years. Anglophone separatists previously used threats to keep the schools closed, but some rebels for the first time are saying they should be spared from the conflict. Bonki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's government said Monday that several hundred schools reopened in its restive English-speaking northwest and southwest regions. Most schools in the regions have been shut down for 3 to 5 years since the start of a separatist conflict to carve out an English-speaking state from Cameroon and its French-speaking majority. Ngida Lawrence-Che is the most senior government official in Kambe, a western district. He says at least half a dozen schools that were sealed by separatists in the 17 villages that make up Nkambe have reopened.
The turnout in these schools is so encouraging. Every single village of the subdivision can boast of functioning schools. This time around, our population are more than ever before determined that these schools must go operational. Proof is that the population of these areas under the leadership of their traditional and religious authorities came out to clear the school campuses.
The government reports that separatists attacked or set fire to more than 200 schools between 2017 and 2019, and nearly all schools in the northwest and southwest regions were shut down. Teachers and school children escaped to safer localities. Capo Daniel is Defense Chief of Staff for the Ambazonian Defense Forces, or the ADF, said to be the largest separatist group in Cameroon. He says ADF has also, for the first time in 5 years, given instructions for schools to reopen.
The future independent state of Ambazonia will not be governed by uneducated people. That is why it is very important for us to institute this alternative educational system, even in the middle of our struggle for separation from Cameroon.
Capo, however, warned government troops not to set foot on any school campus in the restive regions. He said fighters have been instructed to make sure the national anthem of Cameroon is not sung in English-speaking schools. Capo said any school that fails to respect ADF orders will be closed and their teachers and students will be punished. Asheri Kilo is the Secretary of State to Cameroon's Minister of Education. She says children in areas where fighters still prohibit education should be admitted in schools in safer areas. She says the government will continue to deploy troops to make sure that all Cameroonian children in conflict zones have access to education.
You know that we are suffering the problem of insecurity, but while certain places get worse, other places are getting better. And the minister has devised a way of using those teachers who were posted in places that are not exactly safe to go to places that are safe and make up the manpower so as to teach these children.
There was no immediate word Monday on how many students in the northwest and southwest regions had returned to school. For some, it will be the first time in class since 2016. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyus Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international.